The Football Show on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern-day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Welcome along to Thursday's Football Show. Kev is back. And Dan is back too. How are we?
How are you keeping? All good?
Change of costume since you were on with us an hour ago. What is this? The brand new Mayo jersey?
Yeah, I've not been in for a while, have I? So, huge thanks to Elvries for sending me through. So, delighted. Absolutely delighted with myself this evening. Yeah, the new Mayo jersey for next year.
How much did you spend? How much did you put into the coffers?
How much is that?
Like, how you're supporting the team with
travel expenses?
Well,
I've
got my flight booked to New York for May, so that's what I will say, yeah. So, I'll be out supporting the team in New York.
Did you pay for the flight yourself or they booked for it?
So
you actually haven't answered that question.
It's all paid for.
So that was literally just waiting for you.
Just waiting for me today. So
there was just the one in it.
Just the one.
Just the one brand new Mayo jersey.
Did you not get yours?
No.
Did you not?
No, I didn't. No.
Just haven't quite got there yet, Nathan.
You must have got the kids sent through though, did you? No.
No, none for the kids either. Which is awkward because, and this is the God's honest truth. Last Friday there was some sort of dress up day in school. My kids go to school in Dublin. And a proud moment for me, my six-year-old said, I want to dress up as a Mayo footballer. So he stuck on his Mayo jersey and he comes home in tears. Not because he's been bullied by all the Dublin supporting players, because he's the old Mayo jersey. He doesn't have the new Mayo jersey.
I thought you were saying he was getting long-term practice.
Oh, Dan.
He'd lost the final that day at school.
Your mate Neil Cotter was in 20 minutes ago insulting Mayo as well, so let's just leave it at that. That was a proud moment though.
Yeah,
6 years of age and he said, I want to go in, dress as a Mayo footballer.
That's it.
Screw the rest of the class in their Dublin jerseys.
That's proud.
Like it is a lifetime of pain that he's
going to endure. Hence the tears were just preparation.
We will see. Yeah.
We shall see. This is our year.
Yeah. Next year. Not this year, next.
What do you make of James Horne's reappointment, Kev?
Delighted. Yeah, very happy. Very, very happy, yeah.
Have you been texting, WhatsApping? Offering your services. You could be some sort of a strength and conditioning coach or something.
Do you think? Yeah. No, I haven't. I am happy. Mind coach. Mental preparation.
53106 is the text number. If you want to get in touch, we're live as always on all our social channels as well. If you have any comments, we're going to be talking by and large tonight, yet again, about the Republic of Ireland and the fallout from just one point from the two games against Denmark and Wales. Kev hasn't been in with us since. What's your general take on it?
I'll just throw it out there straight away then, yeah. Well, no, I was in actually on Sunday with Dan and Owen and Dave Sneyd, and we were chatting about everything around certainly that first game anyway, and how I felt it was that first match was as bad as it has been. I do genuinely believe that, certainly in many different ways, I think. Certainly from attacking aspect, excitement aspect, anything like that, because I think there was very little to actually come away from the game and think, well, that we did that well tonight. You know, defended well. Personally, I think it was just the numbers that was behind the ball. Exactly. We saw it through well. That's what I would say. We saw a 90-minute through where we were in a bit of a hole after that game over in Cardiff. The other night...
Was it better or worse?
It was better. It was better, I think, for the first 15, 20 minutes, I would say, but... By and large, it was pretty much the same. I think there was a more positive. I think it was a more positive mindset. I think from the players on the pitch in that match. I think certainly the two wing backs was something that Dan and I spoke about as well, and Owen, the lads we spoke about at the weekend. The two wing backs were so deep. They were playing as full backs, five across the back. At least they played a little bit higher. At least they were able to engage and have a bit more of an influence. Only in the early stage of the game, the position I'd feel as though. Says if I'm looking as a left wing back, I used to like playing there myself. As saying, James McLean suits that role. It suits his style of play, but because he's never really played in that position, he goes to the default mechanism in his head. He wants to play as deep as possible, not make a mistake.
So he's not caught out.
Don't get caught out defensively. That's what he's done. Where at least in the second game, he showed a little bit to me where he was actually able to engage and get a bit further forward. Yeah.
So is that not a sign that the manager, who had spoken in the press conference the day before about being more ambitious, playing on the front foot? Is that a sign that Martin O'Neill is still having an impact, that the players were responding to what he'd said in the previous couple of days?
I think they probably knew themselves that it was poor. I'm convinced that Martin O'Neill must have spoke to them in the lead-up to that match and spoke about, look, he must have showed them videos from it and how deep they were and how we're going to get out. You know, what we're going to do when we win the ball back. What are we going to do to actually get us further forward? Who's going to be the ball carrier on the pitch? Which players are going to be that? If you, for want of a better phrase, who's going to be designated it's going to be our out ball immediately? Not necessarily hit the striker, because the striker's so isolated. It's never really on. If it's a long ball up to the striker, it's got to be something special for him to hold onto the ball, i.e. Shane Long. He's got to hold onto the ball and do something special other people into the game.
Is that not a huge problem with any system then? Because that is the, you say it's the out ball, it's the go-to ball time and time again. Kevin Long must have played Friday night and even again on Tuesday 20 long balls to either Shane Long or to Aidan O'Brien. Shane Long won a few frees off them. There was the one flick on at one stage to Seanan Maguire late on, or to Callum Robinson late on against Denmark. But we're constantly going long. So surely there should be players up supporting the attacker so that something can actually come from them.
Yeah, well, I think, as I think we've spoke about it before, we're not going long, we're not going short, we're not doing either, are we? We're not playing... If we are going long, we're not having players in position that know full well that we are going long, that we've got three or four players able to engage, that they're able to go for second balls. I don't think we're even in positions at times where we can actually turn defences, where we're actually playing our way out of the back, where we've played, made a few passes and we're in a position to actually turn a defence. So, and that's not necessarily a long ball. That's as if you're playing it, you know, say it's coming in from a left winger or a left sider, played into midfield, and you just turn a defence. And the striker then immediately knows, as soon as that ball's coming inside, he sets off, so he's gone.
So he's on the shoulder,
he's on the shoulder of the defender. He's pulling away and he gets in behind. I can't remember, and someone might correct, but I can't remember in the last few games, the last four or five games where we've done that regularly, where that was always that was always a ploy that we would always have. You'd have a clever player like, certainly 5 or 6 years ago, if you've got a clever player like Shane Long playing on a football pitch, he doesn't necessarily, he's very good in the air, but he wants to be playing the shoulder defenders, where it's a simple clip ball in behind the defence, where he's able to play on the shoulder, immediately spinning. He's got so much pace, he can get on the end of that.
Yeah. But so that doesn't take what you're talking about there doesn't take a Robbie Keane. It doesn't need to be a Robbie Keane, because that's the question that Martin O'Neill would raise. We don't have the natural goal scorer. You look at the record of the four or five strikers in the squad. Yeah. It's not of international standard for many reasons, that they're just not scoring enough goals in Shane Long's case, or they just haven't had chances or injuries through Hogan and Maguire.
You know, with Shane Long, Shane Long has missed chances. Don't get me wrong, he's missed chances. But if I'm looking back over the course of his last 10 internationals, how many chances...
Well, he hasn't scored in any of them.
Yeah, that's true. How many chances he had? How many chances has he had where he's come off the pitch? There was one game that sticks in my mind. Bloody hell, it was a summer game. I think it was a friendly. I don't know which one it is now, so I'll be guessing. Where he's come off, he's missed two really good chances. I think one of them he miskicked the ball, hit the floor. One of them he total mishit it when he should have scored. How many chances has he had? How many chances is he coming off games and he's missing a glut of chances?
Was that the game against Moldova last year where he actually really wanted to score and he came off for Seanan Maguire with around 10 minutes to go?
You're spot on. That's
I think that was it. And it's but your earlier point about Long, I remember a game 3 or 4 years back, and I'm not bringing up Wes, that's not where I'm going with it, but it was a game against Serbia where in the first 10-15 minutes, I don't know if people remember it, he murdered them. But I'm not even sure if he scored. But Ireland were playing that bit further up the pitch, and it was Wes playing through balls, to be fair, and he spun off the defender, and he actually got into opportunities where on Saturday, I'd say if you like mic'd up Shane Long, as the game was going on, you know, I see they did that in a game in America recently. They mic'd up the goalkeeper. In Ireland you could mic up the lone striker sometimes because he might have a bit of time going, you know, just to see what his feelings were, because I'd say it must have been frustration. And of course, there have been times where Long hasn't performed either. But there are times, there are games where you've unbelievable amount of sympathy for him because there wasn't much he could have done on Saturday to improve the situation, you know. But again,
that doesn't need a Wes Hoolahan to play that type of ball. On Tuesday, say, Jeff Hendrick got the ball numerous occasions on the halfway line or just inside the Welsh half. That when the ball arrived to him, his first thought was, certainly I'll need to take more than one touch with this.
Playing within themselves. They're playing within themselves, Nathan.
Is it playing within themselves because that Shane Long wouldn't be ready if he played that ball, or Aidan O'Brien wouldn't be ready? That they haven't spent a good week on the training ground going, Jeff, if you get the ball in this position, Shane, you're on the shoulder and you're gone. It's a first-time ball. We'll try that two or three times during the match.
But you know what? Even if that hasn't been worked on, that would be something that I've said. If I would have ever played in midfield, would have played in a two or a three, playing for Ireland or playing at club level, whatever it would have been, someone like Robbie Keane would have been constantly saying to me, Kev, you get the ball, give it to me feet, fire it into me. First option is to me. Now, your first option as a fullback, and I've said it before, if I was ever when I was playing fullback, my first option would have always been give it your wide man. First option, out your feet, wide man, get him into the game as quick as you can. Whereas Robbie would be demanding it from you. Why don't you give me the ball, screaming at you to give him the ball? He'd be saying the same to the centre midfield player, the right winger, the right back, whoever it would be, because he's desperate to have involvement in the game. Are the players having that conversation? I don't know. I would like to think they would be, because whether that would be a Robbie Keane or a Kevin Doyle. Kevin Doyle would have been having the same conversations with me. Hit me. I don't mind you. Yeah, so you're giving it to me, so I'm going to, whether it be spinning behind you, so he's spinning on the shoulder, or hit me with a softer pass. Not necessarily, when you say, if I'm going to ping it at you, where it's going to come straight back over your head if necessary, if the defender wins it, or if it's flicked on, it's going straight through to the goalkeeper. Little nice lofted pass, and so it's a softer pass. So if he doesn't win the ball, the defender's winning it, he's not able to get a real purchase on the header, and you're able to get bodies in and around that area where they can win the ball. That's the way I would see it, yeah.
But again, that takes conversations and that takes work, and we touched on that with John.
Yeah, but again, my point was, it's not necessarily the manager that needs to relay that. That needs to come from within the squad. Yes.
Really?
Yeah, it does. That sort of conversation is had between the players themselves.
But would there not have been a tactic, and say you think back to Niall Quinn and Robbie Keane, or Kevin Doyle and Robbie Keane,
yes,
that when you play that little ball 100%. Up to Kevin Doyle, that ye have spent a lot of time in the training ground understanding that when that ball goes to Kevin Doyle, Robbie Keane knows exactly where Doyle, if he does win it, is going to knock it down to?
Definitely would have been the case. Now, certainly if it was under Mick, we would have worked on would have been the functional side of the game. You know, me playing as a left winger, if you can picture it in my head now, getting a ball off Ian Hart, ball comes through to you. If the defender's up your backside, what do? You lay it off to Ian Hart. Ian Hart then would play it through to Niall Quinn or Robbie Keane. You're then either playing off the front of him or you're going in behind him. That then, it turns, it's a midfield player that's coming in behind to back it up. So then you're the out ball, then you're the through ball that's coming in down that side. Right. They're little patterns of play that you would always work on. No, I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing it on the pitch. I'm not seeing these little patterns established. That's we're not seeing it yourself. You're not. We're not. If I'm a wide man in a wide area and I'm maybe a bit further forward, where is my centre forward? My centre forward's got to be the corner of the 18-yard box. That means I get it out of my feet. I'm going to play it with the outside of my left foot or the inside of my right foot. You're playing that first pass, are you following your pass? That in turn then frees your fullback up to get on the overlap. Your centre midfielder's following in behind for a little bounce pass. Any one of these sort of things, it's options and two or three options when you're playing that pass that you know full well that movement off the ball is freeing up a teammate. Mm. That's what it is.
I think one of the problems as well, I don't know, it's one of their frustrations is that, I think we touched on this briefly across the week at another point, that you know it is 11 months since Denmark last year. And we always thought at that point, we always knew at that point that the Nations League games were the next competitive matches. Mm. And we've got to these matches now. And we've got teams that are playing together for the first time. Like, we're talking about like training, groundwork and stuff like that as well. But say in the spring, there was a chance, well, let's get Conor Hearn into the side. Yeah. Let's get Alan Brown into the side. Let's see how they can handle and adapt, you know, the step up to international football. But those players are the two that specifically spring to mind, and others as well. And then you get to this double header where after all of that, the solution is to play Cyrus Christie in the centre of midfield. Yeah. And players who not just facing the complication of, you know, working, you know, arrangements with those around them, as you mentioned, that you would work on in training and so on. Players who haven't actually played the position before at all, in terms of that sort of key area.
Yeah.
And, you know, Harry Arter wasn't there in September. He's back this month. You know, Cyrus is in there. Callum Robinson wasn't really eligible. He was there in May for the Celtic game. He's come in now. Aidan O'Brien has been around the squad and not capped, but did well in Poland last month.
And suddenly, you know, gets the start.
There's it's sort of like just throwing darts at it and see how many of them might stick, you know? And that is a natural obstacle to understanding as well.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the training ground discussion is hugely valid. And there's, you know, you could, in 3 or 4 days with a particular team, I'm sure there's stuff they can do. But I also think there's an element there of not having a clue what the best options or the best side really is. I know the injuries have complicated it too, which is, in fairness, a point that has to be made.
Yeah, I think regardless of, I know the Cyrus Christie one, I can imagine what Conor Horahan, what David Myler, Alan Brown, whoever it would be, I can imagine what they're feeling when they're seeing a lad play in front of them.
Well, it does, and I think Shorty Williams, whoever, last night, like, this is one of these decisions in 5 years we'd be looking back going, do you remember those couple of games where Cyrus Christie played the middle of midfield?
But I also look at James McLean. He's the one, and I've said it before, because that was my side of the pitch, and you kind of always look to that. Whenever I go and watch a game of football now, if I'm not necessarily working, I look at a left back, I look at a left midfielder or a wing back, whoever it would be, and you can relate to the positions that they're taking up. You know exactly what they're doing, and I don't think we're getting the best out of James McLean when he's playing that position, because as I said before, I think he's got the attributes to play brilliantly in that position. He's got a hell of an engine. He needs to be a bit freer because you've got to give him space to run into. That's the way I would see it. It's the perfect position for him. Huge admirer of him with everything that he's done playing in an Irish jersey or wherever he's played. And what he's doing, he's playing, and I feel as though, I may be correct if I'd spoke to him about this as well, but I feel as though he's playing within himself because he's fearful, the same before, about making a mistake. So your natural thing is always to retreat and don't let anything get in behind you. So what I would be saying if
so I you think was tactically saying, he's fearful, because actually when you watch him, he still throws in as many full-blooded challenges as ever.
When he doesn't have the ball, I was watching him even against Paulson the night, ball's in mid-air, and it's almost like a bit of a panic. What do I do? How do I get up again? Did well a couple of times, actually, by just jumping into him and stopping Paulson jumping up against him. But the way you would look at it, if I was him, maybe I would have had it coaching from, it would have been Mick McCarthy and whoever it would be, I would have had it at Preston when I was a kid if I was played that position. The message to me was, play the other side of that attacking player. Do not go the other side of him. Your centre-half that's playing left centre-half, get him off your toes. Do not allow him to come back and play alongside you. Do not be flat with him. He's got to be 10 or 15 yards in advance of you. That message has to come from, whether that with Kevin Long, probably ideally Kevin Long, of course the manager, you're on that touchline near to him in the first half. Get the other side of him. Play a bit of cat and mouse with him. Get him coming back towards you. Be fearful of you. That was the message that would always been relayed to me. Now, I saw him in the two games.
Who was relaying that message to you?
No. Manager, myself, from knowing it, from working on the training ground with it, and also the centre-half when I was like 17, 18. I'm trying to think of players I would have played in the 21s with. I don't know. Bloody hell.
But I'm just wondering, so you're saying Kevin Long. Like, Kevin Long is vastly inexperienced at this level.
Yes,
to be telling James McLean what to do.
He's still 27. No,
but international level.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah. Hasn't played a lot of football over the last few years.
He's played a lot of football. He's been around football clubs. He's not saying he's an inexperienced lad. He should know full well that, look, if that centre-half, they're not going to have four attackers in a lineup against them, so we need to go back and make a five. Then it's not going to be the case, or rarely going to be the case. All it needs to be done, if the attacking player, the right, because they were playing one wide attacking player that was making that second centre forward at times in Paulson. All it takes is James McLean, as he's in advance of him, Longy is in your position, Kevin's in your position, open your shoulder, open your left shoulder out, make sure you've seen him, constant messages like that. So in turn, as soon as Kevin Long's getting the ball, he's saying, look, James, get off my toes, get up the pitch. You can be 10, 15, 20 yards further forward, so you're not actually having an influence on this game. Get off me toes. You're doing my job for me here. You don't need to do that. Get off me toes and go. That's the message that's got to come from on the pitch. Of course, it's got to come from off the pitch as well.
It has to be part of the game plan, doesn't it? Right at the start.
No, I mean that. It's got to be a game plan.
James McLean and Matt Doherty should have been two of our biggest assets for these two games.
No,
on the front
foot. Yeah, my point was it's got to be spoke about on the pitch, but without a doubt, it's got to be worked on for 4 or 5 days beforehand to say, look, he's going to come into this position. How many times have we seen Denmark? Denmark hit diagonal balls constantly. So Paulson down to Eriksen when he's pulling on shoulder defenders. So you've not got that threat from Eriksen anyway. So if he's going to be heading it down, you've not got a natural player that's going to fill that role. Yeah, you've got Dahlberg who was trying to play that sort of role, but he's not in that class. So all that needs to be said is a bit of communication before the game, work on it, tell them exactly how that's going to be. When they're hitting that diagonal ball, James, you don't necessarily need to be always challenging with him. Get yourself in a position where there's a knockdown, yeah? Leave that for your centre-half. So all you do, you shuffle 5 yards further to the other side, further to the left-hand side of the pitch. That's their basics, I'd feel, particularly as a such an attacking threat the way James McLean has been for us. We haven't seen him in the last two games hardly. And that's taken so much away from his game because he's maybe got a negative mindset of not wanting to make a mistake defensively.
Do you think he'll stick with the system? Because, you know, the point you make, you know, that McLean is still, for all McLean can be divisive enough, I think you want him on the pitch still. I think you 100%. Always want him on the pitch.
Without a doubt.
He can be the, you know, he can be the lightning rod for a lot of stuff. But you mentioned there that he's possibly still inhibited within that position, even though it should suit him. And I just don't know, like the last 25 minutes on Saturday with Enda Stevens there, who's played wing back for his last like 60 games for his club, Sheffield United. Like Sheffield United are top of the championship at the moment. Enda Stevens knows, I think, the geography of that position pretty well now. He probably wouldn't need that schooling that you're talking about there in terms of playing the position. But I think the problem with the wing back system is that unless McLean learns that position really quickly, with the sort of tutelage that you're talking about, he's probably going to be wasted there. You know, so, okay, Robbie Brady is coming back. Maybe he sees Robbie Brady as being a left wing back. But I think I'm still not 100% sure after the two games that this 3-5-2 or 3-5-1-1 or whatever you want to call it is going to be the system. Does he see Seamus Coleman really playing there when he comes back? I'm not even so sure about that. But then that comes back again to, well, then we've had this experiment for this two games.
That's what I was going to say.
Will we have something completely different for the two next?
James McLean is suspended.
For Denmark.
I'll put one thing on it as well. James McLean would be the type of player that I probably would have been as a young, because I was an attacking player. So you're asked to play a different role. You're asked to come back and defend. And I was all over the place. And I'd probably still, even when I was playing left back to an extent as well, it was a bit alien to me. All I did is supported from behind. It was an easy enough position to play under Trapattoni because you were kind of supporting from behind, get the ball, give it. You weren't necessarily asked to do anything over elaborate. And it suited me because I wasn't necessarily accustomed to playing that position regularly. Whereas if James McLean's playing wing back, he's suited to it. It just needs coaching. And it's not a lot of coaching. It's basics on how to get yourself into the game, be the out ball for the team. So when we win the ball, they're firing it straight out to you. That's all I would say really on it. And that's the sort of thing that I would have learnt from it from an early age.
Text in from Barry. Between Kev, Keith Andrews, Stephen Hunt and Gary Breen, I haven't heard a single former player say too many positive things about Martin O'Neill's stewardship of the national side. If the guys who understand the game the most think O'Neill's time is up, then I'm with them, from Barry. Do you think O'Neill's time is up?
How much ever saying? It's a strong one to stay. It's a strong statement to state that. Is it though?
The win over Wales. We've won one match of friendly. We don't score any goals at home. It's flat. The entire thing is flat. On the pitch, off the pitch.
It's going to have to be something huge to get the real buzz around the team again, and that's on the and off the pitch, because it's been a difficult watch in the last couple of years. It has the side, and I go back to the point. I've played in some bad performances. Myself personally had some bad performances playing the shirt, and knowing full well that it's difficult then when you're coming around for the next game. You've got that little bit of nervousness, you've got that bit of fear in your head, and it's up to a manager at times just to try and get that out of your system. Remember, even playing under Brian, I'd had a couple of bad games and there was a little bit of stick that was coming my way, and Brian just gave you that little bit of reassurance on, whether that be on the training ground, when you're working on things, and it's just a little bit of reassurance that you need as players individually sometimes when you're not having that the best of times. Collectively, yes, that's a given, but the individual ones as well is something that's needed. But in answer to your question, I don't know. It's a difficult one there. It's a difficult one. I wouldn't want to say that. I wouldn't want to say that. But I think there's vast improvement needed. Yeah.
We have a graphic up there at the moment from the Keith Andrews show, the win percentages, which I'm never quite sure what you can read into, because different managers at different time take friendlies more seriously. Brian Kerr had a 55% win ratio after 33 games ahead of Jack Charlton, Mick McCarthy, Trapattoni, Staunton, O'Neill. Of those six, it's the worst win ratio. Is it damning?
I do think that list, it's not miles off how they might have treated friendlies in some of the cases. O'Neill really... you played with Brian. I think Brian's approach to friendlies was pretty serious. I don't remember too many. I remember that Unity Cup and a couple of maybe not hugely important ones, but O'Neill has completely written off some of the friendlies. Some of the American games
made the
games
point as well that actually the friendlies have been away to Turkey, away to France, away to Poland this year.
He doesn't take them madly. And I actually think two years ago, O'Neill was top of that chart, I think, in terms of his ratio, or he was way up there in terms of competitive games anyway.
We should mention then this morning's newspapers and some of the headlines that were in there. You teed this up last night, that there was some good stuff coming from Martin O'Neill in this breakout that he does with the daily papers for sort of 24 hours.
I would
hours
say
it's later.
One thing, he teed it up brilliantly last night. They didn't give anything away. He was just kind of
trying to tease it. I'm sure he was on the daily papers WhatsApp group, and all the lads are,
Dan. Dan, I was. It was. It's experience. Well,
10 o'clock embargo, is it?
It's experience. Oh, it's later than that.
I haven't bought a daily newspaper in a while, and I bought one this morning. That's what I would say, the way that he teed it up.
What'd you buy?
Yeah. I'm not saying. Indo.
I thought you wrote for the Mail.
Mail, yeah.
Not the Indo and the Mail. Yeah,
and the Times, yeah.
And the other ones that were very good. So, Martin O'Neill had done his press conference, he'd done his TV duties, and he goes out the back, and there's what, six or seven?
Yeah, like six, 7, 8 minutes.
He knows you all well.
He knows the faces, he's probably sick of some of the faces as well.
We don't want to name names, but
it's funny. I sort of put a clip of it out there today, like, and seeing what the reaction is on Twitter, and a lot of people are like, I can't believe it. The odd person's like, I like to see him fighting. I like that bit of fighting.
And was
spirit.
He fighting? So here's the quotes. Reporter, was this you? When do you think you can deliver?
No, that wasn't
O'Neill. I'll win, which it seems a strange response. Reporter, You've never shirked responsibility or belief in your own capabilities. O'Neill, I actually don't think I have, believe it or not, regardless of what people think. I've never shirked the responsibility. I've never really turned to my players. Not that I need to, not for the effort they put into games, which is phenomenal. We're short of some things, but in terms of spirit, drive and determination, it's there. We can turn the corner. You have those qualities, said the reporter. I'll win. We have people ready for the games. I'll be ready and we'll go through. Simple as that. Reporter, we'll go through to the Euros? O'Neill, yes. You're saying that now? Absolutely. What gives you that optimism? Because I'm good.
He didn't deliver it in a mid-Atlantic DJ's accent.
Yeah, no.
I wish he had.
And then throw to a song. Like,
because I'm good. Yeah.
No, it was because I'm good. It was more just straight back at
obviously.
You. Yeah, straight back.
What was his general demeanour? Was it, I'm here to fight, I'm here to lay down a marker for the coming days?
That was his.
He's under the cosh there. He's getting a bit of abuse, a bit of stick, and he's like, sod it, I'm going to come for you.
It wasn't even that tetchy an exchange. Like, I've been to those where it's actually more tense, but it was more...
Nathan's ready.
Nathan's given it a bit of...
drama.
Nathan's put it like... that was far better than actually one of the characters, like, you know. And then another voice came in. You know, it was a bit...
be a pug shit on a podcast.
It was a bit... I've been through tetchier ones. It was more defiant. I don't think he actually, like... it wasn't one of these ones where he was really... I know the short answers make you think it was short, but, like, it did... there was questions either side of that sort of exchange as well. So, I think his mood was combative, maybe, you know, rather than sort of... God, he's losing the plot here or something like that. You know, it wasn't really like that. I think he believes that. Like, I think he believes what he's saying as well. I'm sure, you know, there'd be moments of doubt, but he is a pretty confident figure in terms of what he's achieved in the game. And I think there is that element. And you can sort of take it or leave it. I think it doesn't like, you know, people don't like it. I still think ultimately deep down he does have that view that the players aren't that good. What do you expect? I think that's his view. And you can go around in circles talking about it and disputing it, and I know people will continue to dispute it, and that's probably the main reason for a lot of the criticism when you have Keith and people talking about we could do more with this team. But I think his view is that really he's doing as much as plausible.
Does he have a point in that? So again, going back to the striker situation, Aidan O'Brien plays up front. You say he's been in and around the squad for years. He scored one goal in the league all season this year in the Championship. Shaunie Maguire and Scott Hogan, for various injury reasons, have played little or no international football and little or no football over the past 6 months. And Shane Long just cannot buy a goal for club or country. Where is he meant to create this magic out of?
Well, I know, but in the earlier discussion, we are talking about the chances that aren't even be created for these strikers. It's not as if, you know, the midfielders, it's not as if we're like looking through a blooper reel of misses and these sort of confident, shorn strikers can't stick them away.
We have a situation where actually now players play better for their clubs than they do for the country.
Rather than the way around than it was, I'd probably agree with that. I would agree with that. We're seeing more consistent performances, whereas, probably 5 to 10 years ago, maybe beyond that, we'd have seen players coming in desperate to get in and play for the country, and all of a sudden then you were seeing players producing performances that were way beyond that we'd seen at club. Yeah, I'd totally agree with that. I think it is the other side now. We're not necessarily seeing the performances that lads are putting in, week out. Now, albeit people make that argument, they might be championship level, it might not necessarily be at the very top, but I think a lot of the lads, certainly if I'm looking at over the last 18 months, 2 years, if I'm looking at a Jeff Hendrick, who'd been playing really well for Burnley in the Premier League, Shane Duffy's probably been consistent enough. I think James McLean's maybe the exception. I think he's put in better performances playing for Ireland than he probably has consistently for his club. But by and large, I would probably say you're right with that one. I would say,
We have a lot of texts coming in, Kev. People are very happy to see you back. Congratulations to Kev on the new dog, Maguire. Is it literally after Sam Maguire?
Yes, he is actually after Sam Maguire.
Wow, a great name. I always had Kev pegged as a dog man. The bounding enthusiasm he brought to the game when he was galloping around the pitch. The willing smile. He practically wags his tail when he's in studio with you guys. From days eating painfully dry homemade protein.
He's
balls.
Got a point there. He's got a point.
Maguire's already been praised for his versatility.
Yeah, just run around there. Just get on there and run around. Go on, lad.
The other hot topic of the night is your attire. Lee McGrath's watching on Facebook Live. Can't really take Kev seriously in his retro jersey. It's not retro. This is brand new.
It's brand new, yes.
This is what you're going to be seeing lifting Sam Maguire next September,
exactly.
Baby.
2019, here we go.
Jerry Boom. Birmingham. Where does Kevin see himself in a Mayo jersey on the field of play? Oh, wing back.
Would it be not? don't know, maybe
marauding wing back.
Do you think?
Don't know where you fit in the team, considering.
Yeah.
You know, the
too old now, mate.
Well, there's a Masters team.
Is it?
Jeez. Could be your big break.
Jesus, no.
Could be a TV show on that. And Paul J. Franklin quite simply says, "Like the shirt killer."
Good man.
Straight to the point.
Keep the reaction coming in. 53106 is the text number at Off the Ball, or you can get us on any of our social channels as well. We'll take a quick break.
Get in there. That's what I pay you for.
I think conceit and arrogance is part of a man's makeup. Perhaps I've got too much.
I believe in a different concept of football to Don.
We don't play in the clouds. If God wanted us to play football in the clouds, he'd have put grass there.
That might mean, you know, aiming for utopia, and it might mean being a little bit stupid. But that is the way I am.
And if anything is going to win second division this season, it's character. And I've got it.
How do you react, though, when someone, you know, from your playing staff comes and says, "Boss, I think you're doing this wrongly."
Good. Well, I ask him which way he thinks it should be done, and then we talk about it for 20 minutes, and then we decide I was right.
Oh, you are a bloody disgrace! For missing the target from there, you want bloody shooting!
We get in too much of that, and I suggest you shut up and show more football.
Happiness comes with insight.
I'm a little bit of an idealist.
I'm a good socialist.
I do believe in fairies.
I'm a good dad.
And that is my, you know, outlook.
I'm happy.
Okay, smash it.
Give us a kiss.
Welcome back to Thursday night's football show. It is Nathan, Kev and Dan here till 10 o'clock this evening. Get your text in, 53106. We are talking about Martin O'Neill and maybe what is next for the Republic of Ireland. There were a couple of interesting articles over the last day or so about Martin O'Neill's salary, and Vincent Hogan had a story in The Independent this morning that Martin O'Neill won't be sacked because simply it's too expensive to sack him. Aidan Fitzmaurice had the story in The Herald breaking down the various wages of the top international managers. So, number one, you have Yogi Löw, a man under pressure himself, but has a good body of recent international work behind him, a World Cup winner, €3.8 million. Didier Deschamps, current World Cup winning manager, €3.5 million. Fernando Santos, winner of Euro 2016, €2.5 million.
Three major tournament winners. Yeah.
So the last three major tournament winners are understandably the top three. Number four on the list, Martin O'Neill, €2 million.
I would imagine probably within those, Deschamps and Santos, I would imagine there's probably a bonus on top of that, that would make up the wage.
I wish we'd built a win bonus into Martin O'Neill's contract.
But I thought his first contract did have a qualification bonus, I think. I think his initial Euro 2016 contract was way smaller. It was certainly smaller than what it's believed to have gone up to. Yeah. This is the problem, really. Like, I think this is the issue that probably makes the criticism more severe. I think if we and
why?
We spoke a small bit about this off air, but there are reasons why we've got into this cycle, and it was obviously, there was the Dennis O'Brien support. There was, you know, this after post Steve Staunton and things were at a sort of a pretty low ebb, and there was a feeling that let's get the buzz back. Let's go out there. Let's break the bank. And this was like, you know, Ireland in 2007, you know, / 2008.
We liked all things Italian.
The different mindset, maybe. And let's go out there and do it. And at the time, it was probably, you know, that was welcome. So you can't be completely hypocritical about it. Like, there was that view of, yeah, this is great. But at the time, like, League of Ireland prize money was pretty high as well. And that was slashed in 2011 by a huge amount. And, you know, RDOs and other people within the FAI, you know, jobs were cut. Certain things were reduced, removed. And yet the senior manager's job has remained this, you know, this marquee figure, this bumper sum of money. And so we're having this debate after every Ireland international now, it feels. We're having this big debate about the state of the game in the country and where do we go and, you know, what's happening. And it's very hard to reconcile the fact that Ireland, at this moment in time, with a part-time league, you know, with half-completed stadiums all over the country and all the other litany of problems that we're aware of, has a manager in the top five in Europe in terms of the salary. It shows the extent to which that we're hoping the manager will be this sort of this figure, this galvanising sort of presence who can lift us above that to great things and get us into the tournaments. But it's abundantly clear now that this imbalance is all wrong.
But actually, to turn that on its head, does it not prove that actually, in comparison to these other managers, Martin O'Neill's job is far more important to the national game than any of the others? Because Yogi Löw is important for the national team, which is huge in Germany for a week every month and every summer. but then they go back to Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund. Likewise with Gareth Southgate, the Premier League is the only show in town. Where actually Martin O'Neill has to deal with being on the back pages every single day of every single month, because all we care about is the national team. He is the big show, whereas the other international managers quite often aren't.
I take the point on that, but I still don't think it explains it really.
I don't think that's something that you can throw as an argument. You're still looking at it on the league that we have over here, probably the position that we are maybe in world football or European rankings at the moment. That's what's got to come into account.
I'm playing devil's advocate. You can't look at a list like this and go that Roy Keane is ninth on the list of best played European managers. He's on $600,000 a year, more than Ryan Giggs at Wales. He's level with Ronald Koeman from Netherlands.
It's always top down rather than bottom up in our respect. You know, that's it's just all the chips are on with the senior team management. And see, the point you make there, I know it's just devil's advocate, but if his role was a broader role than just senior manager and he was tasked with other stuff, you know, and we see, you know, Michael.
He is. He's like, he does a lot of corporate stuff and he turns up at a lot of events. Like, he's another role.
How have we become this?
I don't know.
I know how we've become it. But like,
that
you
is
know,
seen as part of his job of turning up and opening things.
But it's all. It's
being
just
the
all,
face.
It's all, but see, it's all wrong. And I guess, you know, because you do wonder sometimes if some of the criticism is justified and if it's fair. But then at the same time, you think of, you know, how much, like, people in Irish football aren't earning much and the game is struggling in parts. And yet, the manager is earning so much money. And, you know, so much money has gone out of Irish football to a management team who can only do so much. That is the thing. They can only do so much. In their defence, like, they can't necessarily control the player development. You know, they can't really do too much about the resources that they deal with. And they are 5 years in the job now, so there would have been time to have an input on that, except that wasn't part of their job initially. So, I mean, our spend and how we do things needs to be different.
That when those figures are put in front of you, that's always going to be used as a stick to beat him with, isn't it? That's going to be used every single time. It will be when you're not getting the results. If he's winning and he's taking us to Euros and the economy's booming off the back of it, the FAI are flourishing off the back of that as well. But we're all of a sudden find ourselves in the balance. We're in a difficult position whether we're going to get to the Euros, and that's where wages and where assistant managers' wages, everything's going to be scrutinised off the back of that when we're in the position we're in.
And I guess the point as well that's often raised that, well, listen, he's the senior team manager, he should only be judged on what's happened on the senior team. It was the role he was given, but when you look at what has happened with Gareth Southgate in England and the way he's come through their under-21 system, and still it seems the control and involvement he has of what happens at an underage level, there is the time there clearly to do it. There is the time to spend hours with your under-21 coaches, with your coaches at the underage levels, and have a real impact from top to bottom. And then you see it with this England squad, which we might get onto as well, of the lack of young players who are coming through, and whether they're just not there or whether they're just not being given a chance. And you touched on it there. Martin O'Neill's in the job 5 years now. If he had identified, and Kev, you can give your thoughts on this, because maybe it's just completely unrealistic, but if 5 years ago Martin O'Neill had come in and thought, well, I'm in this job for the long run, who are the guys that are 17, 18, 19, that I'll be relying on for the Euro 2020 campaign, who are those five or six guys I can identify and bring them in and be some part of it and establish them as international players, even if their club careers aren't going unbelievably? They've worked with me for 5 years, they understand what I want, they know their role in the team. Like, we're now at a stage that we don't have any 22-year-olds in the panel. Yeah. We don't have any 23-year-olds.
I can relate to that perfectly is that when I was in the 21s, my first game up in Drogheda, Mick McCarthy's in the dressing room before the game. So he's in the dressing room before the game. It's his first job at senior international level. Of course, there was that link because Ian Evans, his assistant, was my 21 manager. But Mick McCarthy was at, I think he was at most, if not, well, he wasn't. Certainly wasn't at every game because he couldn't get to the away matches, some of them that we were playing at. But every home game, Mick was at 100%. Mick was in the dressing room before the game. It wasn't intrusive. He wasn't stepping on Ian Evans' toes. He wasn't necessarily overpowering, but it would just be the odd word here and there. So he was constantly watching us. He was talking to us. He was seeing what sort of characters we were, what sort of how we were in a dressing room environment. You know, so he knew what sort of characters, he knew what sort of character I was when I immediately was called into the senior side. My first game, we had Stephen Carr, Stephen Finnan, these lads that were actually obviously going to go on to progress and go further. The likes of Ian Hart came in, Richard Dunn in my 21 team, all these players. So he was seeing them, seeing exactly what they were made of, seeing exactly what they're capable of, but more so seeing the character, seeing exactly what they were like in that environment. I'm not so sure that's happening now. I don't know if it is now. But I'm not talking of just the 21s. I'm convinced that, say, when Brian Kerr was manager, he would have been watching the 17s, he'd have been watching the 19s, he'd have been seeing them individually, what they were like, getting feedback from the 17, 19s and the 21 manager. I know that's happening with England. You know Lee Causey's my best mate. Speak to Lee regularly, who's involved within the FA, involved with the English structure over there. And he's into St George's Park on a weekly basis. Probably he's in there tomorrow and all that. So, and that meeting is a structure of the coaches on what they're doing at all levels. Yes, of course, you've got it. You can only influence what's happening within your team, but you're still listening to what's in the 17s, what's in the 21s, what's around you. That's what you need to
It's funny, the Ireland under 17s a couple of weeks ago and Tala Martin was at the game. I think there's been a bit more conscious effort to
be around this. Well, he was at those games over in England,
but this game a couple of weeks ago was a nothing friendly sort of by comparison. And it's funny, I saw him there and I was like, oh, she's... spoke to a couple of people, and said, Martin Neal's there, fair play. And then someone did say, well, I mean, on his salary, he probably should be. You know, like, what else could he be doing on this, Tuesday afternoon? And I'm thinking, actually, that's probably that's a fair rebuttal as well, you know, because, again, like, we are heading into times where, the laws of engagement have changed. Like, you mentioned the Stephen Carr, the Gaydon Fitz mentioned the other day. He'd played 100 plus Premier League games before he won his first Ireland
Stephen
cap.
Kelly was in here saying something similar. He played 50 times for Spurs before he got his first cap.
Whereas now, someone after a game. So the argument is, you saw someone like Ethan Ampadu step into the Welsh team and how comfortable he looked. They may just be an exceptional player.
But what about someone like Matt Smith, who played on Tuesday night?
City.
Was on loan in Holland. Like, he's still a good bit away from being an established Premier League player, if he ever makes it.
Well, he won't make it at City, let's be fair, he won't.
But he's been given a chance in the middle of midfield in a big game, and Ryan Giggs bringing him in and saying, well, you're now part of what I'm doing. So keep progressing, take your chances, take your loan moves, but you're going to be a part of what I'm doing for the next 4 years.
And just get comfortable with, like, international football and the rhythms. I mean, it's funny, Callum Robinson looked comfortable. Callum Robinson played 30 times underage football for England at international level, but he's sort of used to an international sort of environment and the scene. And the argument is, should we just have a pathway there where stop worrying so much about where the players are playing and just, have guys who've come through our system at 17s, 18s, 19 or whatever, up to 21s, and managers, the senior manager has a real connection and sort of trust them and knows what suits them.
I didn't answer your question when you said to me, should he have said maybe 5 years ago, 17, and simply yes, of course you should have done. That should have been, without a doubt, should have been in place. That at least, even if he's looking at the 21s or the 19s, saying, well, one or two of these lads are going to have to be stepping up to level three or four of them, the way it's gone for us, we ideally would have wanted more. But
he'll do it in the next year, I'm convinced of it. If he's still there, I think there's a lot in the under-19s group. I'd be shocked if in the next couple of international windows, a couple of the promising players aren't brought in for something. Now, you can talk about what the purpose of that would be, but I think that's something that possibly will happen in the next couple of gatherings.
Yeah, a lot of people talking about Ryan Nolan at Inter Milan.
He keeps coming up, but he has not even gotten into the Ireland under-21 squad at the moment.
Well, that's a whole other conversation as to the makeup of the Ireland under-21 squad for the last 2 years, where they seem to have almost changed tack, where Noel King is stuck with pretty much the same
very loyal
20 players in the terms of having some stability and maybe, as they had for a little while, try and qualify rather than it being 10 different players every time who's in a little bit of form and getting them in. We can talk to Noel King hopefully about what's the right way, what is thinking and what actually helps players progress, because you do look at that on 21 side and you didn't see, aside from Declan Rice and Josh Cullen really, too many who looked ready to step up. There's probably more in the 19s.
Mm. Well, yeah, he would argue that some of the 21s will develop, but yeah, I mean, we've got a good 19s group at the moment and we've had good groups of 17s, 19s in the past. You definitely hope that we don't have a situation again where we have a 21 side in 3 or 4 years' time where three of the starters are homegrown.
Well, our record at 21 level has always been poor, hasn't it? It's been poor for too long now, it has, and that was going back to when I was involved in it. We weren't able to put results together, sustain performances.
With Mick McCarthy in the dressing room.
Yeah, but
a lot of the exceptional players got fast tracked.
Yeah, yeah, that was exactly.
Happening right now.
I played.
Developing later now.
I played half a dozen games. I was called into the scene and went back and played a few. So that was how it was really.
We'll take a quick ad break.
remember lying back, pillows on me bed late after, and looking at the top of my wardrobe, stacked with boxes of Morro bars. Batch loaves, not the heels. And butter's another thing. Over the last couple of years, I've gone back, because I wouldn't have tasted butter for about 15, 20 years. Yeah, bread. Bread was a big thing for me when I went over to England. I missed it. Vienna rolls.
Toast.
Rings of pudding used to, sausages. My ma used to, they used to be packed in the luggage compartment on a.
Surely they did sausages. Lingus
would have been right there.
English sausages would
have been. No, they're Irish recipe. They're Irish recipe, which is a nowhere near, is it?
I've had sausages of Grim Stag Weekend over in the UK, and they tasted okay, no?
If they're sausages in a Grim Stag Weekend, Joe. You want to be able to savour the sausage.
Ma bring back the batch, cut a big heel, open up. Eat the heel, flip it over, go for the heel down the bottom, wrap it back up again, flip it back over, put it back in the bread bin so nobody's aware of it until they dug down right at the end. Although there's something nice about toast, putting the butter, if a cold slab of butter on top and just watching it work its way across the toast slowly.
So true.
As God intended. No, just Vienna, it's that fresh bread, not going to the Super Queen, the bread coming out. Breathe it in.
All right, you're welcome back. We're almost done with the football show. Kev, you saw a lot of UEFA Nations League football. Are you aware of how this all works now?
Oh, more than all. I've listened to the bit of a piss take going my way, yeah. I do you know what?
Explain to me how Ireland, even if we lose our next match in Denmark, still have a chance of getting to the
playoffs. You tell me that. No, I listened to the stuff. The stuff that I listened to, back what I was saying, was actually right. It was actually right what I was saying.
Well, in what way?
Let's not repeat it.
Yeah.
In what way?
It doesn't matter. Really.
You see, you can't even remember. It's so complicated, you don't even remember.
Yeah, I made it overcomplicated. I totally get it. I think we all understand it now, don't we? Surely. But it's certainly not. It's not as complicated as it first was made out when it first the format.
Who has surprised you? I, as I said, I was commentating on Romania, Serbia. Neither of whom were particularly impressive in leagues. Yeah. I was expecting more from Serbia.
Yeah, I did England's two games. England Croatia was dreadful. Absolutely awful game to do. England Spain or Spain England. Mm. England with 27% possession proved that the game doesn't need to be about keeping the ball. It's about what you do when you've got it. Even though you might have limited possession, it's about how you're going to hurt the opposition.
Was it quite ballsy of Gareth Southgate to come back from the World Cup having done so well and change his system completely?
Maybe a little bit, yeah. Probably was.
He's got the confidence, the security to do it. Yeah. I would have thought, he's got that sort of credit in the bank that he probably could do it.
Suddenly he made this huge thing of playing Kyle Walker on the right side of a back three. And now Kyle Walker's not even in the team.
Yeah, exactly. That was a way to get those front three into the side, to get Rashford into the team, wasn't it? I'm going to get Rashford, I'm going to get Sterling, and I'm going to get Kane as a front three and really go and hurt teams. And that was how he's done it.
The thing is, the Nations League for them is a bit more of a free shot because they're probably going to qualify anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true. The thing. For those top teams, it's a little bit more of a.
Netherlands did the same. Netherlands against Germany. Netherlands against Germany, maybe quickly added France against Germany. Netherlands were the surprise one, I think, because
what did they do?
Not qualifying for the last two tournaments. Played a bit like England. They had a bit more possession. I think it was about 38% possession against Germany. Germany dominated the ball, created quite a few chances, could have been in front. But the pace that they had with Wijnaldum, with Memphis. With the lad that's at PSV, I'll think of his name in a second for you. Really good counter-attacking style. They played different from what the Dutch football, or the Dutch philosophy, if you like, but brilliant to watch nonetheless, yeah.
OTBAM is back tomorrow morning, 7:45 a.m. on Facebook, Periscope and youtube.com/offtheball. Adrian and Nolan are going to be talking to El Animal, Jason Quigley, just moments after he's left the ring.
Goal, man.
In the early hours of the morning over in California. Tomorrow night, Brian O'Driscoll is going to be in studio looking ahead to round two of the Heineken Champions Cup. We'll have the crappy quiz, and Gavin Cromwell is going to be on Friday Night Racing with Jer and John Duggan. Kev, my thanks to you.
Good man.
Enjoy the jersey. It's a thing of beauty as always.
Yeah, it is, of course.
It's fine. Dan, thank you. Cheers. Should talk to you Saturday.
Yes.
3 to 5. Myself, Dan and Johnny as always looking through all the day's Premier League scores. And we do have live commentary of Everton against Palace. I'll be alongside John Walters.
Good man. Yeah, I heard you earlier on. Yeah, your new commentator.
You've got your new favourite, haven't you?
Yeah, good man.
That is 4 o'clock on Sunday. Tom Dunn is up next. Good luck.
Give him a pull and he had a grass. give you move for the perfect pass. Give him a ball and he had a spice. He'll give you move with good later eyes.